Local underwriting is provided by the UCSF Stress and Depression Study, recruiting premenopausal depressed women not taking antidepressant medications for a study of immune responses to stress. SAD at ucsf.edu.
Hello and welcome to Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics and public policy. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, sitting across from me in the studio as always with a great big old grin on his face, probably because however I started the show seemed funny to him.
No, it's because the state of the state was only 11 minutes and 54 seconds long.
I think it was 56 seconds, actually.
Well, okay.
But I'll go back and clock it. So we are coming to you on Thursday, as we normally tape it, but we're going to put the podcast out as early as possible. No waiting until Friday. Isn't that exciting?
No embargo.
We're just putting that sucker out there. Anthony and I have spent a lot of time talking about the state of the state today already, because he was good enough to be on our statewide newscast, our statewide edition of the California Report this morning, a live show of the state of the state. And you did a great job, Anthony.
Well, thank you, John.
Your play-by-play, your breathless play-by-play from the chamber of the assembly.
And, well, you know, it was your stellar color commentary that and the mutual, held it all together.
And the Mutual Admiration Society continues. But it was a short speech. And I think we decided what we would do here is just kind of talk a little bit about the speech, kind of where it is, and a quick, obvious recounting the fact that there is no budget agreement on the $40 billion problem. I got a feeling it's going to be bigger than $40 billion very soon.
I got
this feeling. And I got the feeling, you know, because the legislative analyst hasn't put out their assessment yet. And they have the latest, financial data that the governor didn't have because his number was crunched back in December.
Right.
I got a feeling it's going to be worse than 40.
Yeah, I don't think things have improved much. And remember, a big chunk of this depends on what happens to the lottery proposal that was part of the last budget.
Oh, true. But I mean, I think the economic situation is going to be worse when we get to see tax revenues and stuff. So watch this space, as you would say in the print world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you say that in the print world? Anyway.
Well, we write it in the print world. We don't say anything.
Sorry, you don't say anything.
No.
You're mute in the print world. Well, anyway, so the governor's state of the state speech, his sixth state of the state since he became governor, the shortest. I mean, last year's was short, too. Last year's was not a full 30, 35-minute speech like a lot of them. But this has got to win the award for short.
Right.
And 10 o'clock in the morning, unusual timing of the day.
So short and inconvenient.
Short and inconvenient. Perfect. Right. Perfect to talk about fiscal doom and gloom. So we're going to play a couple of excerpts from the speech in a moment, just kind of talking about the different tones in the speech. But let's just go ahead and get at what to make of this speech. Anthony, you first.
I think the reason it was short and the reason that it was at 10 a.m. is because there wasn't a whole lot new to say. I mean, in terms of specifics, this speech was not, as the governor said himself, it was not a typical state of the state address that lays out a vision for the year and is filled with policy pronouncements and statements. And that's not what this speech was. It was a very simple, quick, perfunctory rehash of a lot of what we already know, mixed in with a little slap at the legislature for a good measure, which we can talk about in a little bit.
And we will. But it was somber. It was more. It was more just matter of fact than a lot of the Arnold Schwarzenegger speeches have been in times past. And I got the sense, I got the sense that it was delivered in a way that it was just like, OK, I got to get this over with. Let's just get on with things. Mm-hmm. And, that could be for a number of reasons. I've got to believe that there's just a tremendous awkwardness in delivering some kind of big speech in the middle of these negotiations. I mean, by all accounts, negotiations have gotten serious and have gotten really detailed and specific right now about the $40 billion problem. Right. And it's got to be a little weird to get up there and do too much of the normal Arnold Schwarzenegger, back and forth, though there is some of that, and you just alluded to it.
Right,
but
a little bit.
You can only do so much of that when you're in the middle of these really intense negotiations that you don't want to unravel by giving some big speech.
Yeah, and there were all sorts of rumors and suggestions about what was going to be in this speech. I mean, they went from that the governor was going to propose a part-time legislature today. That was going around a couple of days ago, and the fact that it has none of that, and that it is sort of very straight for the most part, simple speech, I think does reflect the tenuous nature of those negotiations and the governor's sensitivity to those negotiations as well.
The other thing that seems striking out of it, And we've talked about this some, but let's just talk about it for a moment before we play some of this big old speech for the podcast listeners. But every state of the state has this weird mix of who the audience is. And there's a dual audience. There's the legislators in the chamber who are listening to the speech. But then there's the California audience in general, listening, watching, theoretically, though I don't know how many people did it live today. We took it live, obviously, but 10 o'clock in the morning, it's hard to get that live coverage that he would have gotten in other years.
Who's going
to
break into Guiding Light for that?
I mean, yeah, really. Or Regis and Kelly or whatever in the heck is on TV at that time. But so those dual audiences are always kind of a weird balance in state of the state speeches. And, you know, this speech to me was another example of that. It's not been a Schwarzenegger forte of trying to figure out who that audience is, because I think he really enjoys the populist nature of saying great big things about, you know, we're going to do this for the people and that for the people. And that doesn't always play so well in the chamber. Yet at the same time, he likes that. In the years past, he has liked that kind of collegial nature of, you know, lawmakers and having cigars with them. And that doesn't play elsewhere. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a weird thing there that I think his speeches always kind of struggle with. And today it really struggled with it. The you're working hard, and then all of a sudden jab them with the, as we'll talk about in a moment, you know, not have your pay. I mean, there's an oddness to it.
Yeah, and it
oddness, that's a great word.
It didn't play. I mean, we've alluded to it twice now. We might as well go into some detail.
But we'll play it in a moment. We'll play the excerpt in a moment. But, so don't give it away yet completely.
Oh, okay. Well, but then how do I make my point? Maybe we should go to the tape.
Make your point first. Let's try it.
Let's just
play the tape. Play the tape.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the jab the governor took today when he talked about the fact that budgets haven't been on time. And maybe there needed to be some incentive to get them on time.
As you know, for the last 20 years of budgeting, only 4 budgets have been on time. So if you don't mind, let me just make a little suggestion. We should make a commitment that the legislators, and the governor too, lose per diem expenses and our paychecks for every day that the budget goes past the constitutional deadline, which is June 15th. I mean, you have to admit, this is a brilliant idea. I look at the happy faces I see there now. I love that. I mean, if you call a taxi and the taxi doesn't show up, you don't have to pay the driver. So if the people's work doesn't get done, I think the people's representatives shouldn't get paid either. That is common sense in the real world.
Okay. Now that the podcast audience has heard the jab about legislative pay, your point, Anthony?
Well, the point being that is the outside audience. That is sort of the base level. That's the easy thing to do, right? I mean, who's going to be against that in the real world?
Right.
I mean, there's a certain logic to it that makes sense, that and a punitive nature to it, and it's easy and it's simple. And I think the Democrats in their response today, the Speaker Karen Bass and the Senate Leader Daryl Steinberg, both sort of guffawed essentially at the governor's suggestion of this. But at the same time, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that he was in other ways careful to not try to upset the egg cart too much, the apple cart, either of them, really.
Apple
the
cart.
Eggs,
I don't think the, I don't, eggs,
no,
are,
eggs,
eggs
come
are not
in
carried
carts.
In a large
no,
cart.
No.
Of course, neither
Golden
are apples.
Goose,
but
no, never mind. Anyway.
Onward.
And that, you know, in other ways, he was sort of tiptoeing around a lot of things, and uncharacteristically so. I mean, I think that... in the past, you know, the governor has sort of relished being more aggressive and flamboyant and dramatic, both in his style and the substance of his speeches, and this lacked a lot of that.
And you know, I, of course, am reminded of the speech where he really took this, you know, populist go-to-the-people kind of thing, which was the 2005 speech,
right.
Which was the get your act together, change all these things, or I'm going to go with the people and we're going to kick your rear end. Which,
how'd that work out?
It happened the other way around.
I think
he got his posterior kicked.
But he got the people part right.
He got the people part right, exactly. It's just that the people weren't with him on that one.
Yeah.
But that was obviously the far end of that kind of thing. But yeah, that has always kind of been there. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, I think you made a great point. Who's going to say, no, let's keep paying them? Even though the legislative leaders, the Democratic leaders, I think Steinberg said in his comments to reporters something like, you know, I'm proud of the legislature sometimes. We try hard.
Right.
Well, that's not wrong. But also, there's a whole lot of things that don't go quite right with the legislature.
Yeah.
So anyway, But the other part of the speech, you know, a lot of the other speech things were things that also people in the hall couldn't disagree with. And I think that, again, is that split between which audience he's talking to. And so the other clip I was going to play was this notion of how did we get to this huge financial problem and what does the financial problem mean and what is it? What do Californians want out of a solution? And the solution he laid out and the kinds of things he laid out and the sacrifices he laid out, I don't think anybody would disagree with. So let's play that clip.
Our citizens do not believe that we in government are in touch with their needs. Now, these needs are not unreasonable, may I remind you. At the end of the day, most people do not require a great deal from their government. They expect just simply the fundamentals. They want to live in safety. They want good education for their children. They want jobs. They want to breathe clean air. They want water when they turn on the faucet. And they want electricity when they turn on the switch. And they want those things delivered efficiently and economically. One of the reasonable expectations that the public has of government is that it will produce a sound and balanced budget. That is what the legislative leaders are struggling to do right now. There's no course left for us but this: to work together, to sacrifice together, and to think of the common good and not our individual good. Now, of course, no one wants to take money from our gang-fighting programs or from Medi-Cal or from education. Of course not. And no one wants to pay more taxes or fees. But each of us has to give up something because our country is in an economic crisis and our state simply doesn't have the money.
And the end of that clip basically saying that everybody has to give up something is the message he has been trying to sell for a long time, whether he can find a real everybody giving up something, I mean, still is the problem.
Well, nobody agrees with that, disagrees with that in the abstract. I think if you talk about the details, you know, that's when you start, that's when things start getting complicated, right? I mean, even as the governor spoke, there was a fairly good sized rally of disabled activists sort of rallying against future or proposed cuts
in, out on the Capitol grounds.
You know, rallying against future cuts or things that are on the table or being discussed. And you know, I mean, the truth is that these cuts that get made and any tax increases that get made are going to hurt some real people. You know, we've talked about this before, the sort of the contradictory nature of what's going on where, you know, federally, I mean, we're talking about ways to try to stimulate the economy and prolonging some tax increases that were promised by Obama on the campaign trail, and you know, because he doesn't want to do anything to undercut the economy. Well, how do you simultaneously stimulate the economy and increase taxes? I mean, it's something of a paradox, and it's one that the governor, I think, has struggled with over the last few months.
And I think everyone has struggled with it because, I mean, that's that non-ending debate that we hear around the Capitol of what's worse, cutting the social safety net of social programs or raising taxes and dragging the economy. And they're both drags on the economy. The question is which one is more of one. And it depending, not completely, but somewhat depending on your partisan alignment, you have a different interpretation. You have a different answer for that question.
Yeah, I think that that ideology goes a long way into shaping your answer to that question.
Yeah, but therein lies the challenge with Schwarzenegger, because I don't think he's ever really been seen, if you look at him fairly, as ideological. I mean, he's been more pragmatic, notwithstanding the times that he has ventured into real ideological rhetoric. But in general, I mean, I think people are going to always look back and see that he was more pragmatic. Whether he was successfully pragmatic or not is another story.
And that's reflected, I think, in the California voters as well. I mean, just this last election, you know, we had a number of bond measures on the ballot that were passed by voters, even in the face of this dire fiscal situation. I mean, we may not
you think
have
that's
known
pragmatism, or that's just like
no, I think it's schizophrenia.
Well, or head buried in the sand, or whatever we call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, where this idea, where of course, you know, all of these things that were that budget insiders complain are tying the hands of the state, whether it's Proposition 98, the school funding measure, or the passage of Prop 13 back in 1978, which reduced property taxes to
low levels.
Right, very low. Locked them in.
I didn't want you to explain Prop 13.
No,
just
no,
like
no.
I won't make you explain Prop 98.
But ended up cutting a lot of local services. It's like, you know, we want services and we want low taxes. And there are certain things Californians are willing to pay for and certain things they're not. And I think there's a lot of division over what those things are.
I wonder how the national press will view what Schwarzenegger said today, if they view it at all, because I was going to talk to the national press and then a plane crashed in the Hudson River and that didn't happen.
You got bounced.
On NPR. I got bounced. But I mean, you know,
nobody had to die.
Thank goodness.
Apparently.
Except the bird that flew into the engine. Yeah. If you haven't followed this story, folks, at this point, you're really behind. You need to get online and read the news. What I was going to say is, I mean, we've talked about this before, I think. The national reputation of Arnold Schwarzenegger and where it doesn't mesh with the California reputation of Arnold Schwarzenegger. The post-partisan, reaching across party lines, green Republican, you know, which it's not that that's all inaccurate or false or whatever. It's just a small part of the larger story. And the larger part of the story is inability to get past this divide that preceded him. And I think, frankly, is going to exist after he's gone.
And I don't think this speech, I mean, look, he gets a lot of national attention because of who he is. And that's not to say, and that's not because he's the governor of California necessarily. It's because he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And there is national interest in Arnold Schwarzenegger. There always will be. But I don't think that this speech will get much attention. I mean, we'll see what happens in the papers tomorrow. But in the grand narrative and of the Schwarzenegger governorship, this is a blip on the radar. I mean, this really is seriously nothing of consequence.
The speech is not
right.
The issue.
Right. Well, the issue, and if the issue gets resolved, certainly that'll be interesting. You know, I mean, on the larger issue. I mean, you're probably hearing a lot of this too. I keep hearing more and more that what's more likely now is what they're calling an 18-month solution, what could end up being an early passage of the budget for the upcoming fiscal year, because you know Democrats don't want to have to vote twice on cuts and Republicans don't want to have to vote twice on taxes, and I think that there is sort of implicit in that, an agreement that whatever solution is reached is going to contain some of both.
And the pro tem, Daryl Steinberg, said that as much today. Said, let's not forget, if we come to an agreement in the next 2 weeks, as we're hoping to do on this $40 billion problem, given that includes the 2009-2010 budget year, that'd be the earliest budget in the history of California.
Does that mean that the legislators should get a bonus if they're going to get docked for passing it late? Should there be incentive to pass it early?
I doubt anyone's going to run that idea out there.
Remember after the Whittier earthquake, right? The incentives to finish the project early. I don't know.
I don't think the same incentives
just
exist.
Just throwing it out there. It might be a tough sell.
I think it might be a tough sell indeed. I guess the only other thing to say is maybe outside of the speech is kind of like, you know, well, what happens now? I mean, how you get these two sides together in the statewide broadcast we did on the speech, where we had some reaction afterwards, I was struck by how difficult it still is to figure out where that middle ground is. Roger Nilo, Republican from Sacramento, who's the vice chair of the Assembly Budget Committee, was on briefly. And I tried to press him, as any good reporter would, about is there any circumstance that you could vote for a tax increase? And you know, he began again the message of we need reform. We need budget process reform, government reform.
So that's
we know that's been a spending cap and things like that before. Right. But he still wouldn't say, well, that would be enough. But he said we have to do that first. And we've got to look at the way we're spending money first. And then we had Lori Saldana on, who's a Democratic Assembly member from San Diego, Speaker pro tem in the State Assembly. And her message was, well, we've cut enough. We've already cut $20 billion over recent months. We can't keep cutting. Now, granted, they don't represent the entire view of their caucuses, but I still fail to see where the compromise, where the deal is.
Well, I think that, you know, the discussion you just described is a lot of the public posturing that's still going on.
So I've bought into the public versus the private.
But if you notice now, I mean, I think you've been at these stakeouts at the Big Five meetings when
painful.
The legislative leaders are in talking to the governor, and they're much more tight-lipped now than they were, you know, back in December when this was going on. And I think that's an indication that there are some things that are not going to be popular that are being talked about honestly behind closed doors. And, you know, and in that sense, you know, you can just sort of try to ordain what's going on or divine what's going on just from reading body language or getting really, really good sourcing stuff leaked to you. But the lack of leaks is usually an indication that real progress is being made.
Yeah. And of course, the question is, how long will it take that progress to be, and whether it staves off any of what we're talking about the state running out of cash and possible IOUs or deferments of payments. And we had some of that discussion this week, too. And right. I mean, you know, all of these ideas are great, but at a certain point, there is a reality, it appears, next month where we've got real cash problems. So,
yeah, where the state won't be able to pay most of its bills, and the state controller is going to have some decisions to make about which bills need to be paid right away.
Yeah, because even though there's all of this language about what order you pay them in, it's incredibly murky language.
Right.
It says public education and debt service are the two things that get paid first.
Right.
But then when you start putting things in categories, like one of the questions I asked someone this week was all those revenue anticipation notes called RANs that we sold in the fall, about $5 billion worth. Are they part of the debt service that's listed there? Technically, they're not. Because the debt service listed is technically general obligation bonds, which I know wonk.
Revenue bonds.
Yeah, which I'm sorry, wonk folks, but it's, you know, bear with me if you're not a wonk here. But that's technically not the same kind of debt. But that's not to say the controller couldn't do it. That's not to say they wouldn't honor those. There are going to be some gray areas of distinction there. There are going to be some pissed off people who right. don't get money from the state.
And one of the things that we keep hearing about the payments that are likely to be deferred are tax refunds.
Mm-hmm. Boy, and, talk about angry people with that.
And student loans or financial aid payments.
Right.
So.
Right. Talk about two angry constituencies, most notably tax returns. I mean, that affects right. basically everybody.
Yep.
That's the equivalent of the car tax anger.
Though not everybody gets a refund. Right.
Depends on how you did your finances.
So.
Well, we'll leave the state of the state and we'll leave this week's stuff here. But I'm going to give you a chance to plug here, Anthony York.
What am I plugging?
You're plugging California poll.
Yes.
From Capital Weekly, an exclusive to Capital Weekly starting next week. Tell us all about it.
No, starting February 5th, I believe, will be the first Capital Weekly poll.
Oh, pardon me.
But
we have to wait even longer. But go ahead, tell us about the poll.
Yeah, very excited. We've partnered with Adam Probolsky of Probolsky Research, and we were going to have a regular poll. On questions, on whatever we want to ask. So if you have ideas, you know, feel free and come and ask us.
Your cell phone. Well, people are trying to find you about this poll, even as the podcast is going on.
I turned that thing off. Pardon me.
So why a poll? Are you looking to ask questions that aren't being asked, or what's the?
I think so. I think, you know, the LA Times closed its poll this year. There's now no newspaper in California that has its own poll. But we wanted to focus specifically on California issues. You know, we have the Field Poll and the Public Policy Institute. They do regular surveys, but a lot of that is policy stuff. We want to delve a little bit deeper into some of the political questions as well, maybe things that may not be before voters, and try to take their temperature in other ways, and also look at some other things like legislative races and things that we don't see public polling on. So the hope and the goal and the aim is that that our readers will get that much more insight and information into the stuff we cover up here at California Government and Politics.
And it's going to always be published on a Thursday, which means we probably won't get an embargoed copy for the podcast, will we?
What? No, we usually record the podcast.
Well, we record it on Thursdays, yeah. We'd love to know a week in advance, Anthony.
Yeah, well.
We'd love to break the news here.
Well, you know, we'll talk. We'll talk off the air.
Right. We'll see how much the podcast can contribute to paying for the polling.
That's right.
And so you intend to do it every quarter, every 3 months?
That's the idea, yes.
And the first one is February 5th.
February 5th.
So look out for that.
Here it comes.
CapitalWeekly.net.
With an O.
With an O. Could anyone forget that at this point? Well, that's enough. We have now gone exactly 10 minutes longer than the governor's state of the state yet. So, you know, there's nothing like a longer analysis of the speech.
But
we
said more, right?
Right. So, it was more thoughtful. It was from the heart. Anyway, that'll do it for this week. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.